America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We are back in your lives. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobbio. It's Chris Algieri. We're coming to you off of what was a really good Saturday of boxing over in Germany and in Brooklyn. Dalton Smith is your new super lightweight champion, WBC. Ajit Kabayel picked up a huge win over in Germany in front of a raucous, raucous crowd. The PPV.com card was really good. Some fights of the year contenders, round of the year contender, knockout of the year contender. So all in all, it wasn't the biggest Saturday on paper, but it did deliver if you're one of those sickos that watched all day long like me and Chris did. Chris, hello. How are you?
What's up, Dan? As one of those sickos, I enjoyed yesterday quite a bit. I love the afternoon fights. I freaking love that. I can sit down. It's 4 p.m. I'm outside by my pool, the sun's still out, watching the fights. And that was a fun fight. That crowd was sick. We got to get more fights in Germany. Kabayel. So apparently, we've been pronouncing his name wrong. It's Agate, not Agate.
Yeah, it's Agate.
Okay.
I wrote that down, and I still messed it up. I wrote it down, still messed it up.
Agate. Every time, you know, he's mentioned on our show, I say how much I like his name, and I've been saying it wrong the whole time. Still a very cool name. I like his name. Agate Kabayel. Dude, he is intense, man. He didn't blink in the stare down. He was getting his ass kicked, honestly, for the first couple rounds. Yeah, but just stayed true. Fun guy. Fun fighter. I get why people came out for him. I mean, that crowd was sick.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second, but I do want to start with Dalton Smith's destruction of Subriel Matias at Barclays Center. Dalton Smith stops Subriel Matias in five rounds to become the new WBC champion, 140 pounds. Arguably one of the best wins for a British boxer traveling over to the U.S. Definitive, right off the bat. First punch of the fight, snap back Matias's head. Was pumping the jab, was landing that right hand over the top. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, wow. I know that Dalton Smith is a brawler, but I was like, I'm surprised he's using this tactic. Is he trying to get to Matias before Matias can get to him? Is he going to gas out? He wins the second round. I thought he won the third round. I thought the broadcast was very, very pro Matias because I was not seeing the things that the analyst was seeing on the broadcast. But they ends up stopping him in round five with a series of right hands. One of the better wins and just a great scene afterwards with his dad in the ring and his post-fight speech, and just reminded you of like how special this sport could be when you see a underdog come across the pond or an underdog step into the ring, kind of like you did 10, 11 years ago. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit, and walk away with a title, and you could see how much it means to him. But, man, that's a great win for Dalton Smith. I know he's a guy that was very underrated, and there was a lot of UK fans that believed in him. But he is a new player now, 140, because he's got a strap now. He is burst onto the scene, Dalton Smith.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, Dalton Smith, listen, there was no question about what Matias was going into this fight. We all knew. He was a limited, slow-footed puncher who puts relentless pressure on you. He has a lot of experience. And he did. He put pressure. I mean, it was completely ineffectual. But the question was all about Dalton Smith. And I had said this, you know, in the last show. I'm like, a guy like Dalton Smith should beat a guy like Matias. But is Dalton Smith ready? Can he fight a disciplined fight for as long as is necessary to win the fight? I would have expected him to box a little more, kind of like how Liam Parro did. And Liam Parro, also, not a boxer, but he boxed the day that he fought Matias, and he really exposed him. Dalton went out there and fought Matias's fight. And if you watch from a strategic standpoint, what he did, which was very smart, every time, because Matias starts slow. He starts slow in every fight. He usually loses the first round, usually a lot of the first couple of rounds, gets hit a lot. Guy does not move his head at all. Actually moves it less now than ever. But he starts slow.
It's moving, Chris. It's just moving back a lot.
Yeah, well, so his nickname going into this fight was No Mas Tias, right? Or No Mas Tia. Now it's Pez Dispenser because that dude's neck must be killing him today because every single jab and right hand that Dalton Smith threw landed because there was no lateral head movement. There was no up and down head movement at all. He stayed on the center line the entire time. His head, he can count every light on the Barclays ceiling. He knows every light that's up there after watching, after that fight. But back to this, what Dalton Smith did so good strategically. Number one, he started fast. He did his homework. He knew that Matias was a slow starter. Number two, he stayed on the jab in between power punches, kept that head bobbling all night long. And then number three, when Matias did start to throw and did start to get some quote-unquote momentum, he smothered him. He pushed him back. He stepped into him. He smothered him. So this is something you mentioned, how he reminded you of my fight back in the day. I'm going to say a little bit yes, but I fought an actual boogeyman. Matias is a fake boogeyman. I've been saying that for a long time. He's not truly the boogeyman. I fought the actual boogeyman of the division back in my day. But similar to Ruslan, who is a physically strong guy and a big puncher, just like Matias, not good on the inside. Ruslan let me push him around on the inside. He didn't choose to waste any energy with the wrestling on the inside, which is part of boxing, the inside scramble. He didn't do that with me. And I was able to control. Every time we got close, I was able to control him physically. Dalton Smith did that to Subriel Matias. Matias did not waste any energy on the inside to try and fight off Dalton Smith, to position himself, to land his power shots. He was on his heels. Everything he landed, he was on his heels when he landed it, which is why Dalton Smith was able to walk through the shots. Yes, he got cut. Yes, he got bloody from the nose. But at no point in that fight did Dalton Smith look like he wasn't in control. I saw some comments, people like, oh, Dalton Smith got lucky. First of all, he landed 8 straight punches in a row to finish the fight. There's no luck in that. He threw 8 punches. He landed 8. That's not luck. Second of all, luck, he was winning every second of every round. Like you said, the very first punch that landed had Matias hurt. So I don't know where these fans get this stuff from. I know the broadcast was absurd. The things they were saying were off the wall. They were really glazing. I'm watching, I'm listening, and I'm like,
not our guy, Erdman. Like,
I love Erdman. Erdman's great. And I love, I love Marquez. I love everybody. But I'm listening, and I'm like, they're really fishing for something because there was nothing. There was nothing to say positive about Matias during the fight, but those guys were really laying it on thick.
It's not the biggest takeaway about the broadcast, but just something that I've seen, and now that I've called fights and you call fights as well, you can really find yourself falling into a trap where you think you have a perceived notion of how you think the fight's going to go beforehand. Matias is this killer. He's going to walk him down. He's got the
He starts
power.
Slow. He's going to come on.
He starts slow, and then when it starts to not happen, a lot of broadcasters stop calling what they actually are seeing in the ring and are calling it with a tint of what they thought was going to happen.
Right.
And
that's laying on their prediction. Happened.
Yes. Yeah. And they're just like, can't believe that what they're actually seeing, or not calling what they're actually seeing anymore, just looking for moments for Matias. Cause I did not see anything that Marquez was saying there. I think he's a great analyst. Maybe just had a bad night, but that's not even besides the point. But yeah, I was really, really impressed with Dalton Smith's game plan here. Was I'm going to come out and I'm going to lay it on Matias in the very first round. He landed 24 of 76, Smith. Matias was only 1 of 15. He outlanded Matias 111 to 92, outthrew him, outlanded him in the power department. Matias did have his moments. Matias was started to find a home for that chopping left hook. Like Matias, both guys were pretty much doing one thing over and over, and it was working. Yep. Smith, towards the end, how he ended the fight was with 3 straight counter rights that Matias just could not see, or just was done by that time to stop the fight. But what Matias kept doing was he just kept tipping it a tiny step back and throwing that chopping left. Tiny step back, throwing that chopping left. He was starting to get a lot of success. He started to bloody the nose, cut Smith. And I'm thinking in my head, like, I actually love this game plan from Smith. It's either going to be very successful, he's going to raise that title above over his shoulders, or he's going to lose. But damn it, he's going to go out guns a-blazing. He's going to go out leaving no doubt. And it worked. And that's what makes it one of the better British wins for a fighter coming overseas, because how many times have a British fighter come over here, maybe they win like a dodgy decision, or there was no doubt. And I think a lot of British boxing fans are very proud this morning because they're like, oh, that's our guy from Sheffield. He goes over across the overseas and he beats the guy at his game. You know, that's not what, even though Dalton Smith is a puncher, because I had a lot of people.
Yeah, he can punch.
Right. I had a lot of people in my mentions as well, or a lot of people telling me, like, Dan, have you ever watched Smith? Because he's not a boxer. Like, he was always going to stand in front of Matias. Yes and no.
Yes and no. Like I said about Paro. Paro is not necessarily known as a boxer. Chris, he boxed Matias.
You could answer this. Yes and no. Like, even if you are not technically a quote-unquote boxer and you're fighting Matias, it is not a smart game plan to stand there and trade with him.
Lucas Matisse versus Ruslan Provodnikov. Lucas Matisse is a puncher, was always a puncher. He boxed Ruslan. And he said after the fight, he goes, I just watched the Algeria fight. You got it. You can't stand in front of Ruslan. Matisse, very similar. He's not the kind of guy you want to stand in front of. The difference is that Matisse is hittable just like Ruslan. But Matisse gets hurt. And like I said, Smith and their team, they did their homework, man. They watched this guy. They know he starts slow and they know he gets hurt. And they took advantage of that. They were able to hit him. They were able to hurt him. Not the best guy to stand in front of. You're going to get into a war. You're going to get nicked up. You're going to get cut. You're going to get a bloody nose, which is what happened to Dalton Smith. But he stayed in the pocket and was able to get the finish. Leon Paro chose to move more. He didn't take that damage the way that Dalton did. But he went to decision. He had to deal with that guy for 12 rounds. Dalton got him out of there early.
Yeah, that was – I would love to have, like – heard the game plan talks in the camp, you know, like, hey, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna blitz this guy, and Dalton Smith's like, oh man, really? Like, okay, listen to his coach. All right, let's do it. Let's go through with this game plan,
dude. Sometimes game plans come together. Like, I remember when I was fighting Amir Khan, I called my coach, who was John David Jackson at the time, in the night before the weigh-in, and I was fighting at 47, so I wasn't cutting weight. I wasn't worried about that, so I just called in coach, and I'm like, hey, coach, can you come to the room quick? He's like, yeah, sure. Comes over, boom, comes to the room, sits down. We're hanging out. We're kind of just like small talking a little bit. And I'm like, a little bit of a silence. And I go, hey, coach, I think I'm going to go right at him. And
what John was the game plan all camp?
Box, set up the right hand, keep moving, lateral movement, lateral movement, lateral movement.
Basically your entire career.
Right. Well, up until that point, yes. And I go, coach, I think I'm going to go right at him. And John David Jackson and John David, John never looks you in the eye, just kind of looks down and goes, looks over at me, but kind of looking at the floor, shrugs his shoulders, goes, all right, champ, if that's what you want to do, and let's do it. And I was like, I'm going to go right at him. And he's like, all right, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go right at him. And sure enough, went right at him and it made for a great fight. Didn't get the win, but that's how things can come across sometimes. But Dalton Smith, I wouldn't be surprised if that was their game plan the whole time through camp.
No, it had to be because it looked so calculated. It was just he came out and didn't – there was no feel-out round. I love that. Just came out and set the tone really early. Within the first 10 seconds, Matias' head was snapped back four or five times, and I'm thinking in my mind, like, no way it's going to be this easy. Like, there's going to be – like, Matias is going to wake up, and he's going to find Smith, and Isaac – this is what I'm thinking in real time. Like, oh, it's a valiant effort from Smith. I respect this effort, and I respect this game plan. I respect going for it, but – we've seen this from time and time for Matias, whether you like his style or not, or whether you agree with it or not, like more times than not, he has eaten a lot of shots early and then somehow finds that second wind in those middle rounds, either stops you or breaks you down for a decision win, most likely stops you. So that's what I thought was going to happen. That's what I was watching in real time. It's like, all right, yeah, okay, so when does Smith break? When does he crumble? Cut now, cut twice, bleeding everywhere. Like, when is this going to, like, you know, crowd against them? Wasn't a big crowd, but it was definitely pro-Puerto Rican. And he got it. And that's fairy tale stuff. You know, then his dad comes in the ring, and they were so excited. I don't know if you caught that part because it was on. It was pretty late. The dad was just going on. Claudia's like, we're running out of time here. They brought the grandpa in, the dad, the uncle, everyone in his entire town was in the ring after the fight. Sheffield, England has a new champ, and that's pretty freaking awesome, man. And we get pretty hardened in the sport, where we see a lot of crap and we put up with a lot of nonsense. But like every so often, we got a nice story here. He seems like a nice guy, Smith, and a breath of fresh air at 140 because he has a big fan base. I mean, you know, Sheffield, England, and just England in general shows up for their champions, and it's a very loaded weight class now, Chris. It's loaded. So I want you to power rank the champions at 140 pounds. You got Dalton Smith, WBC, you got Teofimo, WBO, and ring. Gary Antoine Russell, WBA, Richardson Hitchens, IBF.
Tio, Russell, Hitchens, Dalton.
It's pretty, I would agree with that. Tio, number one, pretty even easy. Though he could lose, even though I'm having him lose to Shakur. You have Russell, two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe he's the dark horse and just needs to get more busy. Hitchens 3, and then Smith 4. I like Hitchens versus Dalton Smith.
I do too, but I also like Hitchens versus Duarte, which I believe is on the docket. That's a really good fight. Duarte has been on an absolute tear since the Ryan Garcia fight.
Four fight win streak.
Yeah, and I think they're all KOs, or he has one decision in there, but regardless.
He got a decision over Kenneth Sims.
Yes, and Kenneth Sims is a very good fighter. Let's go back to the champions, though. Yes, Dalton Smith, and fans might look at me as overlooking him. I'm not. I just don't know enough about him. I know, you know, we learned a lot.
Fourth.
We learned a lot about him last night, for sure. And he made it work, and he did the damn thing. But I was just very underwhelmed by Matias' performance. So you might have to kind of add that into the mix when you're talking about, you know, that win. Kind of how you'd have to look at Zepeda, you know, the Zepeda win, which is the best win up until this point. It's like, yeah, but he's old, shot. So it's like, how much do you take from that? Yes, he did it in amazing fashion, just like he did last night. But if the guy is not that guy anymore, you know, it comes a little bit hollow. But I do think Dalton has all the tools. He has all the skills. He hits hard. Seems like he can box a little bit. It's a great story. Seems like a great guy, just like you said. I'm happy for him. But I got to see him more to deal with a seasoned guy, even like Hitchens, which I think is a very close fight. But I still have Hitchens edging him at 3. Russell is just he's a beast. Absolutely.
We need him to get busy,
beast.
Man. We need Gary
absolute
Antoine
beast.
Russell to get busy. Because,
good thing he's young.
Yeah, but like, he's not like 20. What is he? I'm horrible with ages.
They're all young. It's great.
He's under 30. But he was supposed to fight Andy Hiroka, Gary Antoine Russell.
What happened to that? That's a good fight. Andy Hiroka can fight.
Yeah, but that was on the Tank Jake card. And that went away because MVP and Matchroom took over the Joshua card. So therefore, we're not going to put a PBC fighter on it. Anyway, Gary Antoine, I mean, all these fights are good. Like, if Teofimo ends up losing to Shakur goes into this mix. And I do think Shakur will stay at 140 for a little bit. So... And you also
He stays from now on. I don't think he goes back to 35.
Yeah, it's very rare we see these guys go down after they go up. You got to add in Shakur. You got to add in Pitbull Cruz. You got to add in Lamont Roach. There's some other good names on 140 as well. But yeah, I would say Smith presents something to this puzzle at 140 is that he's from England and he can sell over there. And if you're Hitchens, who's not the biggest ticket seller here in New York, and you want a unification, you think you can beat Dalton Smith, you might have to go overseas to do it, where you could make a lot more money. Gary Antoine Russell versus Smith stylistically is great. Shakur versus Dalton Smith is stylistically great. Shakur, it's just a fun division.
I don't want to see that.
What?
I don't want to see Shakur and Dalton.
I put that one at like 1% chance of ever happening.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Even though, like, you don't think Smith presents, like, he's more of, like, would be the brawler in the Shakur scenario. I know he would be.
Yeah, that's the Shakur worst style to wildly... fight Shakur. It's the worst style. You have to counterpunch Shakur. Just like with De Los Santos. He was the guy who gave Shakur the most trouble.
Zepeda gave Shakur the best, most aesthetically pleasing fight, but not that Smith's going to throw 100 punches around.
Completely different style, though. Zepeda right. and Dalton aren't, you can't compare them. That's apples and oranges. Yeah, no, I don't know.
But in terms of a guy coming forward.
But is Dalton really that guy? I think he is. I don't know. I've seen him fight before. He's not a just come forward guy. This style he chose to employ last night was a strategic choice. He's more of a boxer puncher. He's very clean, super clean fighter. Super clean
why
boxer.
Are
boxer
all these Brits in my mentions saying, Dan.
Because he can punch.
Yeah, Dan, why are you surprised? Or Dan, like, this has always been Dalton Smith. He's always going to stand in trade. He's not. He's more of a puncher than a boxer.
I don't see that as a standing and trading. I see him as a boxer puncher who can actually really punch.
Makes sense.
Because he doesn't get hit that much. So which for a lot of British fans, you don't see it because the UK fans, they like stylists much more so than over here. And they get a lot more credit over there for boxing. When you got a guy like Dalton who can really punch and gets knockouts, his ability to become a star is a lot greater because then it's like, whoa, this guy can box and he can punch. I don't see him as a brawler. I don't think that's a good designation for him. I don't think he would say he's a brawler. I think he's a boxer puncher.
Yeah, he's definitely not. He's definitely like had like yeah, like you said, has the that shot when you need it, the power when you obviously stopped Matias and it got his attention right away.
His left hook was good too, though. You were mentioning how when Matias was getting on a little bit, yeah, but every time he got on, Dalton landed the last punch. He always landed the last punch.
Crack.
Yeah, over the top, right? Or left hook. Yep.
He was really good, and his jab was nice, and his footwork. It was just a great freaking performance, man. I was super impressed with that, and it was just clean. It was very clean. There was nothing you could possibly take away from him this night. He knocked out the champ, basically in his hometown. I know it's not his hometown, but you know his home turf.
Home turf, yes.
And walked away a champion, and now he's a champ. He's got Eddie Hearn behind him, which is a big thing. I've seen some tweets about Adam Azeem, who is a 140-pound like quasi-contender, no longer a prospect. I don't see that like anytime. So, like I know they were dancing around each other, Smith and Azeem, because they were the two best or two most promising guys.
Why have Brits knock each other off?
Domestic dust-up?
Don't do that. These guys are world-class, both of them. Azeem is world-class, too. They should go – if anything, they should go collect the titles and then fight each other and unify. They shouldn't fight now.
Yeah, they're not going to fight now. Alberto Puello, I believe, is mandatory for Dalton Smith to WBC or sometime.
I mean, that would be deserving. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to sidestep that for a more lucrative fight, but that would make a lot of sense. I think Sandra Martin needs to be in the talks too, because he's one of those guys who's been right there. People think that he beat Puello. People think that he beat T.O., the guy's never been a world champion. It's hard not to have him in the discussion, but they won't. They'll pass him over because he just doesn't have the profile and he's a tough fight.
Ring Magazine has Hitchens 1, Super Matias 2. This is not updated as of last night. Puello 3, Barboza 4, Russell 5, Sandor Martin 6, Dalton Smith 7, Azeem 8, Lindolfo Delgado 9, and Andy Hiroka 10. No sign of Pitbull Cruz, no sign of Lamont Roach.
You're probably going to have to swap Matias and Dalton at that, like literally, like what was that? Seven and two. Probably swap that. Still got Hitchens. Antoine, Russell, Hitchens, Dalton. That should be the top three guys there.
Russell's so good. He just never fights. So
yeah.
He had one of the best performances last year when he took out Venezuela.
Dan, apparently it doesn't matter because even if he's not. Like, if he's on the shelf, he comes off the shelf and is in complete battle mode.
I just want to see him more. This guy, come on. Get busy, bro. Get busy. I thought it was a good production. Fresh Productions got pretty ripped all week long because of the lack of promotion and all of that. But I thought, like, watching on TV, I thought the graphics were nice. I thought the presentation was nice. Obviously, PPV.com stream was elite. That's – you never have to worry about that.
Had a great team. You had Valdez, you had Claudia, you had Marquez, you had
barely talked.
Yeah, I saw him in the beginning, and then I don't know what else. Maybe he. I don't know if he was doing something. I didn't watch the entire show, so was there any in between where he was there? Or I don't know.
Well, he was on the stand up, and I think he was the third man in the booth. But all I heard was Marquez. I did not hear Valdez. I barely heard Valdez. So I don't know what happened there. But yeah, I thought it was a good production. It was a great card. You had arguably the knockout of the year. Nestor Bravo flattened Pedro Campa in round two. And you arguably had the round of the year. Javier Cintron, Victor Sandoval, 5 knockdowns in the first round. Cintron down early and down hard within the first 20 seconds. He gets up and rallies to score 4 knockdowns and win the fight in the first round over Sandoval. So whoever was in attendance yesterday at Barclays, you had a nice little night of boxing. You saw a little bit of everything. Some big knockouts, some crazy rounds, title changing hands. So
a lot of Puerto Rico Mexico matchups, and Mexico was smart. On the bad end of every one of those. And then we had a Brit beat the Puerto Rican in the main.
Tough scene. Speaking of scenes, bro. Over to Germany. And how are we saying it again? I want to get it right.
Agate.
Say it 5 times. Agate Caballel stops Kniba in the 3rd round over in an electric scene in Germany. That was one of the loudest atmospheres I've ever heard. They were erupting every shot that Caballel landed. He got through the fire in the first round. He was getting pieced up in the first round. just pieced up by Kniba. And then a third round stoppage, which was kind of early.
Super early, Dan. Super early. Actually, we didn't even talk about the people who were saying that a lot of people were saying that the Matthias fight was stopped early.
Oh, give me a
which
break,
is mind blowing.
Did you see mind blowing his legs when he got to 10? He was all disheveled, all over the place.
But also he was getting hurt so much throughout the entire fight. That ref was that close watching him.
His body Pez was Spencer, like the yes. no. Mm-hmm. He was like the inflatable guy outside of the cargo
the gas station.
Yes, that was his legs and everything was like an S. He was this so discombobulated, Matias. There was no
so
like,
many people were saying it was early though, which is crazy.
It's anyway, got to be the Puerto Ricans. They're a very loyal fan base.
Die hard. Kniba though, that was a bad stoppage, dude. It was just. I know he was hurt. I know it was probably going to happen. The tides had absolutely turned. And like you said, Kniba was piecing Agut up in the first round. Cut him in a really bad spot, on the eyelid. That's a fight-stopping cut, dude. You give that a couple rounds when you got a tall guy who's pumping that jab in your face like Kniba was. Oof, that's a bad spot. He was getting hurt too, Agut. He got hit with a couple right hands that buzzed him. He got hit with some good uppercuts. Rounds one and two went to Kniba. Got some success in the second round. It was funny. We say that he's the best body puncher in the heavyweight division, which is absolutely true. Every time he lands to the body, you see him grow. Like, you saw his confidence. In the first round, I'm like, oh, man, he looked really down and out. He couldn't get on the inside, waiting in, getting beat up. Second round, he lands a body shot, and you saw his eyes, and it's like, oh, he's on now. He's on now. And then it was turning into a really good slugfest in that third round, and then the ref just stepped in. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? I lost you, Dan. I'm not hearing you.
You got me now?
Now I got you, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I was muted. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, it was a little bit of a bad stoppage, but I do agree with Barry Jones, I believe it was, on the call for DAZN, is that, you know, the referee was the closest guy in the ring. He may have saw the eyes of Kniba, because he was getting – it was a right hand that was the beginning of the end, and it was loud. It was, like, louder than the crowd, and the crowd was absolutely lit.
There was a lot of right hands in that round.
A lot of – yeah, but there was one cracking right hand that started the final, like, last chapter of the fight, and – you know, the referee's in there, and he could see more than we can. Maybe he saw something with the eyes. But I believe this, the magnitude of the fight, which Barry Jones said on the call, which I agree, is you got to let it play out a little bit more, especially because Kniba won arguably won the first two rounds.
Yeah, the guy's up.
He's a massive underdog.
The guy's a massive underdog. He's in the opponent's hometown. He wins the first two rounds. He had a really bad third round, but let him get up. Let him see it. Let him whatever. Let him see it through a little bit. Let him get knocked out.
He didn't even go down once.
That's what I mean. He didn't even go down. Let him go down. He's also undefeated. The guy's never lost. So you're just going to take that O from him like that? I don't know. I was not happy with that stoppage.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that Caballo was on his way to winning. I mean, that's what I always justify as like a bad stoppage. But, you know, the writing was on the wall. You know, like Kniba was going to lose. But that's still, so, I don't know.
It doesn't matter because next time that ref is doing a fight like that with a hometown boy, and then maybe it's not in his – maybe the fight really is in the hands of this guy, and he makes a bad call. It's like you got to call it out regardless of what was going to happen or not.
Did you see this? This is a little sidetrack here. The National Combat Sports Summit. Jack Reese attended it, and it was a story written on Boxing Scene by Lance Pugmire.
Yeah, I did see it.
They went over a bunch of things, and this is means something. This is meaningful here because Reese believes that Gotti Ward would have been stopped at round 9 if it was now.
I think it would have been stopped if there was any other ref in there except for Frank Cappuccino, to tell you the truth. I was there. I was at the fight. It was absolute mayhem in that round, and it was hard to watch. I was sick to my stomach at the end of that fight. That would have been stopped by I don't care what error it would have. It would have been stopped by anyone. Well, maybe not.
Well, Reese is saying that they would have taught or put way more there's it just fights are stopped quicker now
way
because
quicker.
You know, of what happened a couple of years ago at MSG with one of them.
I don't like early stoppages. I'd rather give the guys a chance. Recuperative powers and abilities of fighters, especially young fighters, undefeated fighters, is huge. Look at me, dude. I went down a bunch. I always got back up. I always tried to win. If I would have been stopped in some of those, if I would have been stopped in the Ruslan fight in that first round, what the hell are we doing?
We're not here right now.
Right, we're not here right now. Exactly. You know, if I would have been stopped in, you know, with that bad Pacquiao knockdown, I've been knocked down really bad times and recovered. Recovery is part of what's in your physical genetic makeup of certain guys, certain people. Arturo Gatti had a great recuperative power. I had a very good recuperative power. You can't take that away from a guy. It's literally one of your talents. And if you just wave a fight off because the guy lands hard, you're not giving them a chance.
Yes, but there's a big difference between the fights you just listed and what you just explained and what was going on in Gatti Ward. Like, that was straight up like punishment. Mayhem. Punishment. And it was the moralist. You should go read it. It's a great story on Boxing Scene because they went into that. They went into very crazy that Jack Reese admitted that there's nothing in writing that taking a voluntary knee results in a knockdown. And obviously, this is in relation to the Tank versus Roach fight.
Whoa.
It's like, now it is. Now it is. Now that, like, I even though it goes state by state with the rule set, I wish there was a national rule set, but there isn't. It's state
by
state.
That's a very silly rule. Of course, there should be a knockdown.
Right.
You can't take up time. There's no timeouts in boxing. It's one of the great things about our sport.
That's what Reese said. It's like, obviously, like, we all knew that that should be counted as a 10-9. But if you went by the book in New York, there's nothing in writing that says that when Tank took that knee, that's an automatic 10-9.
Well, New York doesn't go by, first of all, New York doesn't go by the books. If you go by the books, then Matias would not have been allowed to fight the other night because the Osterine is a zero, no threshold drug. The only reason it happened is because New York allowed it. WADA does not allow that. USADA does not allow that. If you have any Osterine in your system, you're out.
Did you see what Dalton Smith
in competition, out competition. Yeah, I mean, my peds are in between my legs. That's pretty awesome. That's a pretty awesome statement.
Those are bars. I mean, he was flown last night. Yeah, he said, my peds are right here, his hands, and then his mind, and then his balls.
You know, the perceived good guy won. You know, like that's like, you said the dark horse. Well, like, Dalton Smith is like the light knight.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely there. Matias played the heel pretty well. He was going after Eddie Hearn all week. Mm-hmm, and, you know,
made for some viral moments.
Very limited viral moments this week for that promotion. But back to Cavalier, he went off on a little bit of a tangent here. Six stoppages in a row. He's a WBC interim champion. I would like to issue an apology to Mr. Cavalier because when his name came up for Usyk over the summer, I said, you know what? I like Cavalier. I think he's deserving. Good looking heavyweight. Can he sell? What's his profile? I don't think he can sell. Can he lure Usyk into a fight? Because at the stage that Usyk's in now at age 38, where Usyk just wants big fights, he's looking to fight Usyk in United States or Jake Paul in an MMA cage. I was dead wrong. Cavalier, this guy can sell. That crowd was one of the best crowds I've heard in years.
They love him.
George Warren in the ring, looking snazzy, Frank Warren's son, said that's one of the loudest crowds I've ever heard in all my years of boxing. I know he was probably laying it on thick, but there's got to be a little bit of truth in that. It was so loud in there. German people love boxing. They love kickboxing. Yes. They love boxing. Go back to Klitschko days. I think he could lure Usyk in there. It's just down to Usyk if he wants to do it. But it's definitely an option now for Alexander Usyk to fight Cavalier over in Germany because it will generate a stadium level type of crowd and they'll be very into it. It's just, I think Cavalier is good, not great. And I got some flack yesterday for tweeting that out. He's good, but it's now a watered down heavyweight division because we're on the tail end of it. He's solid, Cavalier, but I think Usyk could beat him. I think Wardley could beat him.
I don't think it's watered down. I just think that we're getting a changing in the guard.
That's what I mean. We're in a transition tail end.
Yeah, that's like, not so watered down. I think we have talented guys coming up. The Wardley's,
but if you look at it right now,
but that's always. I mean, you're always going to have a changing of the guard in a transitionary period. You know, the top end guys are old. You know, like literally, like we're looking at guys that are in their late 30s.
Question marks on a lot of them.
And inactivity doesn't help. I guarantee, mark my words, Usyk's going to Germany to fight Cavalier. Why would he not? First of all, the crowd, right? Second of all, there's not a lot of meaningful fights for Usyk right now. It's kind of slim pickings. It's hard to find. You know, he obviously doesn't really want that Wardley fight, which I don't blame him. And then third, watching that performance, watching him get outboxed and cracked with right hands from a guy who is using an amateurish style. Why would you? The fans are going to come after me too. I think it's a pretty easy fight for Usyk.
Oh, it's definitely an easy fight for Usyk. And
the only thing that kind of makes me think though is Caballero is a phenomenal body puncher. Usyk can't take it to the body, dude. We know that from amateurs.
You look at hit in the
body? Heavyweight. I don't think anybody can.
Right, like I get it. Like Caballero is very deserving. We talked earlier about we're giving Smith a lot of credit for his win over Matias, but you have to also look at what Matias is. Caballero has the win over Zhang, but you have to look at what Zhang was at that time. Like, you know, was he at the top of his game? No, he wasn't. But Caballero, if you just use your eye test, which I think a lot of fans get really caught up in the resume part of boxing and not the actual skills, because I said I think Atama would give Caballero problems. I think Wardley would. And, you know, Atama, what do you mean? He hasn't fought anyone. Just use your eyes, like the skill, not resume, obviously. Yeah. Atama hasn't fought anyone. He's 20 years old.
Yeah. The athleticism would be a problem. I have a hard time not seeing Agut, how he was in the first round, wading through punches and slow-footed and bringing his feet together. A lot of footwork mistakes going on, bad habits that I could see in that first and second round. You do that with the highest level guys and the fight's over. So yeah, I actually agree with you this time, Dan, even though these fans are coming at you, but listen, fans are fanatics. I get it. I know you love your guy. I really like Agut Caballero. I've been talking about him for months now. I'm a big fan. But I don't know if he's at that upper echelon level to hang with those guys that you mentioned.
Does Fabio Wardley beat Caballero?
Yes.
Right now,
Javier Wardley is a big, strong puncher with athleticism. If the amount of right hands that Caballero got hit with yesterday, you can't do that with Wardley. He lands one of those and you're on your back.
Right. He might go down on the cards early on, but the thing with Wardley, he always catches you.
And
when he gets hands on you, he puts you out. We'll see with Atama. Obviously, he's a little bit further away. But in like a perfect world, if we were looking at the sport like a healthy sport, Caballero would probably fight Wardley, and then we would have a clear winner, clear option for Usyk. But Usyk, it's not like that boxing. Usyk is fighting Deontay Wilder in April or May, probably in Los Angeles, because that's what he wants to do, and he has every right to do that. But Caballero, I would say this about Caballero is that he got a fight in early January. It's a huge year for him. I think he's 33 years old. He's interim champion of WBC. He's knocking on the doorstep of title shot. He's got now a country behind him, and a very enthused country behind him.
I don't think that's now. I think that's always been the case. We just didn't know it.
We were just being dumb Americans. And
yes, we're being dumb Americans over here.
Thinking everything revolves around America. I said I was wrong. Like I said, I have no problem apologizing to when I'm wrong. I love it. I was sitting there watching that fight yesterday and saying, I have to add Germany to my list. It has to happen this year where I have to go overseas and check out a fight. I had never been to the UK. I think that's going to change with most viable promotions.
They haven't had a lot of fights in Germany as of late.
No, because
once the Klitschko's were, the Klitschko era ended, because they had fights there all the time. They were huge events, humongous. That's why they never left. The Klitschko's never left Germany because they had
those are badass,
amazing events.
I remember watching those like on HBO. Like they would just do that Saturday 5 o'clock on HBO one off. Klitschko just jabs another heavyweight to death, and
throws one right hand and it's over.
And that's that. And then we say, man, I wonder what could be. But that crowd was sick. Like, I want to go to Germany and watch a boxing event. I want to go to UK, watch it. I want to go to Japan. So it might be the world tour.
I got peeps in Germany, dude. I got a lot of peeps in Germany. I did a couple boxing seminars in Germany a bunch of years back. We can go to, we should go for Oktoberfest. Inside
bro, I can't
boxing.
Drink beer.
You're the worst.
Well, should I just just say frigate?
How did I get a podcast partner who doesn't drink beer? This is
I listen, bro. I have a gluten allergy. What do you want me to do?
That's not even a thing.
It might be. Listen, it might be fake because when I was in Puerto Rico, you know how it is when you're calling 10 fights in a row on the air for 9 hours. I was so hungry in San Juan. I DoorDashed a quesadilla to the arena, and the runner brought it right over to ringside. And they messed up the order, and it was a flour tortilla. And I ate the damn thing because I was so hungry. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm flying the next day. This is really bad. But I was, as I was eating it, like, this is so good. But I don't care. Then later that night, ate a bunch of gluten. And then I lived. Nothing happened to me. Got on the flight. Didn't die. I'm here today.
Maybe it's just the American food system, the standard American diet, the sad diet is attacking your guts. And if you go to Germany, which they have very high standards for their beer and water, maybe your belly will be okay. Dan's little tummy will be okay.
I would love nothing more than to go to a crazy German boxing event, walk out of that arena, drink a fucking pint of beer, and eat a giant pretzel.
When I went,
I'd be the happy person.
I think it was 2000, maybe 16. I don't know when I went, but I went over there, and this was when I was sponsored by Adidas, as they call it, Adidas, and they took amazing care of me. Oh, and this is how
you say it there,
Adidas. Yeah,
okay, good to know.
And so we're going to, because they have their own tent, the company tent, in one of the German beer gardens, and so. I'm with my buddy Mike, who's from over there, and he's showing me, you know, how we start the day, and we sit down, we're gonna have breakfast together, and we get a sausage and a beer, and I'm like, aren't we going to a whole beer festival? He goes, no. He's like, you gotta coat your stomach, okay? Jesus. So it was a white sausage and a it was sauerkraut, a sausage.
Was it at least a light beer?
They don't have light beers there, dude. It's not like here. There's not light beer. Everything's like 5% or more. So
just
you have a beer
to me right now,
and there's a pilsner. It's like this high, and I'm like, okay. And they're like, this is how we start our day. He's like, yeah, we got to coat our stomach. I was like, oh man. We get there, and then like, but listen, that's another thing. Like, we're talking about, you know, the beer of Oktoberfest, and when you're in Munich, but it's also the food. You eat a ton of food, and if you're gluten, dude, you should not be there. But maybe over there you'll be okay, because you're eating pretzels, you're eating sandwiches, you're eating.
That's what I mean. It's like a lot of bread, like
schnitzel, yeah,
schnitzel, like
breaded stuff. It's all wheat, it's very beer. Hearty food.
Yeah, I gotta figure that out. I gotta get there though. I just had an epiphany last night where it's like, all right, I've done so many great fights here in the U.S. and it's super cool to travel to Vegas and Florida and L.A.
We have fans of the podcast over there in Munich and Nuremberg, so.
I just want Caballero to keep fighting there, because that crowd was incredible crowd. And I will say this about Caballero in terms of his boxing skills. Yeah, he has some deficiencies. Every fighter does. The first round, I was very, very eye-opening with him getting pieced up. But he did rally fast. I mean, he was cut over the eye, too, and he just laid it on. And when he turns it on, he's a very talented offensive fighter, whether it's the body work or whether it's finding leverage as a shorter guy to land that right hand on that big opponent. Like, Usyk's not that tall, but, you know, a lot of those other heavyweights are tall. So I probably would think that they brought in Kanimba for that as well. But I was really impressed with how fast he turned it on, how quickly he went through some adversity in the first round between a cut and just getting pieced up. He's good. Like, he's very solid.
Very good. He's
very, very deserving of whatever this year comes of him. I hope he gets Usyk. I hope that happens. Like, back to your other point about Usyk. I just don't know what's Usyk's like goals now. What's his plan? What are his moves? Like, the Wilder move is strange, but I kind of get it. Like, is he up for a Caballero fight? Is that above Usyk now? Is he above a Wardley fight? Does he want to look for these freak show fights with Jake Paul? What's his thing now?
Okay, so if it's money, he's going Jake Paul. If it's events, he's going Caballero. If it's challengers, he's going Wardley. Simple as that.
But even Wardley is a big fight too in the UK.
Sure.
In terms of crowd.
Sure. I don't think it's as big as Caballero in Germany. But,
no, it's not. Not after what I saw yesterday.
Definitely a big fight. And then what was the last one? Oh, and then legacy, he wants the Wilder fight. That's a legacy fight. That's closing a circle. That's for him in his own mind, but also historically. Listen, we're going to look back on this 20 years from now and be like, wow, he beat all those guys. Doesn't matter what version of Wilder he got. When you look back in history, he beat all those guys. And that's what he's doing. He's closing that cipher to make sure that he gets that last guy. And then from there, if he wants to call it a quits, he might do it. But like I said, if he wants money, it's Jake Paul route. If he wants the biggest challenge, it's the Wardley route. If it's the biggest events, it's the Caballero route. Simple as that.
Yeah, I hope.
Oh,
one
thing about Caballero that I wanted to cut you off before, then moving on to Usyk. And please, fans, I want to hear your response. You get a little bit of Turo Gotti from this guy. First round, gets pieced up, gets cut, has to come from behind, starts with the body shots, ends up knocking you out with right hands over the top.
I mean, I was impressed by that. I was like,
super impressed.
Lingered. I could have went sideways for Carabao really fast, and it didn't because he. I mean, yes, the ref stepped in, but it was going to end maybe the next round. But I was very impressed by that. Like, it's one thing to you know, suffer through a 7-8-9 round fight or potentially go down in the cards, and but he didn't, and so
didn't allow it. Yeah.
Listen, allow that to happen.
No heavyweights can take it to the body, man. It's totally different. I was talking about Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield only been stopped one time by James Toney, who's a middleweight, and he got stopped to the body. No one ever really went to Evander's body. James Toney did and stuck to it. He was a great body puncher. That was the only time he's ever been stopped. Well, I think he got stopped also by what's his name?
Vitor Belfort.
But he had a oh Jesus, no. But he had a heart condition in that one. But like truly, truly stopped. Was by a body shot. So heavyweights are not accustomed to body shots.
Yeah, I hope that happens. And I have no problem with Wilder, Usyk. I think
I don't either. A lot of people do.
I think Usyk is hell-bent on staging a fight in the U.S., wants some of that rub, wants the U.S. treatment. I think
he should just fight Jake Paul in the U.S.
Well, they're looking for a promoter for this fight. It's not Turkey. It's not Riyadh season. Usyk versus Wilder is not Riyadh season. Wilder is no longer affiliated with PBC. They're looking for a promoter. And, you know, there's only so many promoters here in the U.S. And especially there's one big promoter that puts on big events in the U.S. That's MVP. So I don't know if what will happen there. But I get why Usyk's doing this. He wants to come to the U.S., wants to fight, you know, end that era, fight Wilder. He has every right to. But I
beat the American in America. That makes perfect sense.
Right, and then the second half of the year, let's hope that Usyk looks at neither a Wardley if he keeps on winning or a Carvajal. We end the show with some nonsense. I was really annoyed when I watched this video of Oscar De La Hoya. De La Hoya wants a 60-40 split in favor of Virgil Ortiz versus Jerron Ennis. Ortiz's side says the most recent offer is lower than the previous two that they all
already which he accepted. Right.
I had Rick, manager Rick of Virgil Ortiz, responding to me directly because I said this should be a 50-50 fight. This is one of the most 50-50 fights in terms of financial splits that I could remember in recent times, but that's not what Virgil's side is saying. It's not a 50. De La Hoya wants 60-40. It's just getting so tiresome. This is not a mega fight. That's why I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I have it at a zero, like a very, very low percentage that Virgil Ortiz fights Ennis.
You can't have it at zero, but like a 10%. A 2%. Yeah, nah. I mean, the way this has been dragging on, and I was really being hopeful when I heard the Netflix was like dropping the hammer and be like, oh, we got to make this fight now. DAZN. I don't know why I keep saying Netflix. When DAZN put the hammer down, like as a network, being like, "Hey, but we need this fight now." I was very hopeful, but now hearing this, remember what I said in the very beginning: certain promoters are deal makers, other promoters are deal breakers. We're seeing who's who here.
So De La Hoya is the deal breaker.
I said that from the very get-go.
I mean, he is. I get how De La Hoya moves. He has a small stable. He has the top-heavy stable. He has Ryan Garcia. He has Virgil Ortiz. Those are his two prized possessions. He has to be very careful with them.
And he's rolled the die on Ryan a few times. Didn't work out.
He hasn't worked out, but I think he's gotten the most out of Ryan Garcia. Like, considering what Ryan Garcia is, like, he's not an elite caliber fighter. He's a name first. And he's
money train.
He's cashed in pretty damn. I think the De La Hoya Ryan Garcia marriage, I think, has been successful despite all their lumps and fights.
I think, you know, from the outset, like on paper, you're like, oh, Ryan and De La Hoya, that's perfect. They're like the same guy. No, Ryan is not De La Hoya. De La Hoya was an Olympic gold medalist, one of the best fighters of a generation. Ryan ain't that. Ryan's good. Ryan's talented. Nowhere near the level of De La Hoya. And we're starting to see that. I think De La Hoya saw the writing on the wall because De La Hoya was a bit of a train wreck himself coming up through the years. But he was so super ridiculously talented and had so much experience that we really didn't see it till much later. I think with Ryan, De La Hoya looked at him and goes, I see where this is going, and it's going to go there way faster than it went for me. Let's get that money. And I said he's a money train. He's a money train wreck. And De La Hoya has cashed in on the wreckage, but it's still going. Ryan is still going. He's walking into a title fight. And it has, the marriage has worked out. They've both made a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, but Oscar had to be careful with Ryan, and to a certain degree, Thurman never tanked because that proved to be a big time money maker. Thurman there at Haney, that wasn't the same level of success commercial as it was for the tank fight, but still made good money. But when it comes to Virgil Ortiz, you got to be very careful with how they're moving Ortiz and how you navigate this guy. Like, 60-40, whatever. Like, it's such a, they're very evenly matched on paper, and they're very evenly matched with, if you go down to the business side of things. I'm not privy to the documents like Rick is. I don't know any of the negotiation stuff. A lot of fans don't know any of the negotiation stuff. They pretend like they know, but they really don't. But what we can see, and what I think is going to happen, is that De La Hoya just does not want to put Virgil Ortiz in there with Ennis just yet. De La Hoya wants to put Virgil Ortiz in there with Errol Spence. And they want to do it at Cowboy Stadium. They want to do it in Dallas. And then they're going to circle back to the Ennis fight. I mean, this has been happening for years. Like, this fight is not a mega fight. It's a good fight. It's a fight that fans want to see. I think it's the best fight you can make in the U.S. for sure. But it's not like this big-time moneymaker yet. If Virgil fights a Spence and does a really good gate at Cowboy Stadium, then they go back to this Ennis negotiation with even more leverage or even more bullet points.
Yeah, that's probably the route they're going to go. And it's not marination per se. It's more just building the profile.
Textbook
negotiating. Promotion. Yeah, but it's also, you know what's going to happen, Dan, is, yeah, you do the Spence fight, right? Virgil becomes a bigger star. What does that 60-40 become then?
Yeah, I know. They're gonna ask
and how much?
70.
And how much further do we get from making this fight happen?
Scary, because this is what happens very in boxing all the time. What you just said is what happens in boxing all the time when you put off a fight. Like, things happen. Guys get into car accidents. Guys lose. Guys' profiles grow,
and then they promoters' egos grow, and management ego grows, and then you've got deal breakers. Deal makers turned into deal breakers.
Well, I don't know what goes on with the zone. How heavy are they? What type of pressure are they really applying? Oscar on the outs with the zone? Because there was a rumor that I didn't put too much thought into a couple of weeks ago that Golden Boy was leaving the zone. Next thing I know, I see an article written in Boxing Scene that Oscar is looking forward to working with PBC. You know, PBC works with Amazon. So, you know, that could be a thing there. A PBC Golden Boy pay-per-view would be Errol Spence and Virgil Ortiz. Spence posted a picture yesterday. It was in amazing shape. Absolutely ripped, Errol Spence.
I didn't see that. Is that on?
It's on his Instagram. Like, I mean, I saw him in Texas at the beginning of the month of January, and he was in really good shape. He's always in good shape, Spence. But just like, he's been retired for 2 years now. This comeback rumors for Spence are crazy. I don't know if it's Spence, but for Ortiz, but that would make sense to me. And then how will Boots counter? Will Boots fight a Charlo? These are all winnable fights for Ortiz and Boots. It's just like risky business when it's right there to be made and the network wants it.
I keep saying, like, I hope that we're in this era where we're going to get these guys fighting each other. And this is one of those fights, too. Guys are going to put their O's on the line and take the risk. But when you have a promoter like De La Hoya, who's in the old world, was like, oh, we got to build them. We got to build it. 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 Building's over. We there's a lot of bridges now in the current era of boxing. A lot of it's social media stuff, because obviously you see guys like Ryan Garcia who jumped the line. You see guys like Jake Paul who jumped the line. So there's it's a different trajectory now, how fast you can get guys into position. It's not like it used to be, we got to get them to 25-0, 30-0. And then he can fight for a title. That's not the way it is anymore. So you can make these fights earlier, but if you're in the old school mindset of like, no, we gotta build, right. you get this, you get these roadblocks.
Yeah, from a business standpoint, I mean, as much as I want to see Boots and Ennis fight this year, and I think they could fight twice if they really wanted to and make a boatload of money, if you put a gun to my head, I would say Virgil's going to fight Spence. Or something like that.
And yeah, that writing's been on the wall for a while. Well, I've said that. We said that about PBC. They don't let fights go. You know, we're still going to see Fundora Zoo. You know, the Virgil fight. You know, Spence getting Spence in there is probably still going to happen. When deals have already been kind of put together, it's like they see it through.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that. It's become very tiresome. I think fans are just at their wits' end with this because it's just all the old aspects of boxing that we can't stand. There's two promoters just talking a lot, a fight not being made. It's just not what fans want to hear, not what fans want to see. Hopefully we get that fight because I think it's a damn good fight. All right, that's our episode. We will be back later in the week. Not much fights later on this weekend. It's a little bit of a slower fight weekend, but we'll drum something up. We always drum something up to talk about, right, Chris?
There's always things to talk about. Boxing is as old as time, and this is all we do, ladies and gentlemen, so there'll be plenty for us to discuss.
Well, I'm actually planning a golf trip. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. South Florida golf trip is being planned with the boys.
Yeah, Boca. I mean, this is, people come to Florida for this, especially this side over here, Boca, West Palm Beach. Dude, we've got the president of the United States, Donnie T, down here. That guy loves to golf. I think he golfs more than he does anything else.
I think he golfs more than he governs.
That's what I was alluding to. So, yeah, this is a great place to come down and golf.
Yeah, I'm going to get your thoughts off camera, but where I'm looking at a couple hotels, got a couple courses circled. Do you golf?
I do not. I used to.
Do you want to come ride around with us?
No, I'll come play if I'm going to come. I'm just going to come ride around. I'm pretty bad too. I was actually very good when I was a teenager because my grandfather from Argentina somehow fell into loving golf and got very good at it. He used to have me take lessons. Lessons with a pro, and then I broke my wrist and completely changed my swing and never put the time into to kind of figure it out again. But I do. I mean, I've been playing in golf outings, dude. When you're a world champion, you get invited to so many golf outings. I was doing golf outings all the time back in the day in the 2010s and 2000-aughts.
That's the best part of golf is that you can make business deals, and that's why.
What it's for.
Well, I like it now because it's like the only way to like see your friends when you get to a certain age. It's like a very easy hangout session. Like, let's golf, let's eat, let's
go. Yeah, wait till you get married. After. That's really what husbands and fathers just need excuses to get away from the home, and the golf is a good one because it's really long.
This new building that I'm living in has a golf simulator in it. And last night,
I did see that. There. I saw you cracking some. Yeah, I saw it. Looks good.
Look at that swing. Bah!
Yeah, man.
Lefty. Yeah, southpaw.
You've always been a pretty athletic guy. I mean, your boxing sucks, but other things.
My boxing sucks. My golf sucks a little bit less.
Your baseball's pretty decent. Your golf's pretty decent. Your boxing is god awful.
I never That's boxed. Why should I? It would be weird if I was just good right away.
You're a man. Like, every man should have something, dude.
I was never taught. I guarantee you,
you didn't do martial arts as a kid?
No. I was playing organized team sports.
What kind of Long Island are you, dude?
But I guarantee, like,
You didn't get any scraps when you were young? I mean,
I was the guy that instigated the fights with my mouth, and then my friends.
Were the one who started the fight. Is that surprising? There's always that guy. That guy.
I am getting into the gym and going to start hitting mitts, and then we'll see. Because I can throw my left hand is good. My jab, like my technique is bad. I've never been taught. So I'm looking into the gym.
I know so few Long Island guys who don't fight. Who didn't fight, I should say. It's so funny because the people are like, oh, Chris is a nice guy. He probably never got in a street fight. I got street fights all the time. If you're like, growing up in Long Island, I don't understand how you did not get into fights growing up.
Into many near fights. Like
people don't understand Long Island. People don't understand that Long Islanders fist fight.
Oh, my friends all fought. It's a big part of the culture.
I know you know it, but people listening, they don't understand that. They're like, oh, this guy comes from Long Island. How come he doesn't fight? I'm like, no, we always fist fought quite a bit.
Yeah. Brawls.
Huntington Village, dude.
Oof. That's where it went down. All right, everyone. We'll see you later in the week with more on this wonderful sport that we love. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.